Some angles this morning not to miss on the latest data on presidential campaign fundraising. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. Just before the drama unfolded at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland last night, all the presidential campaigns, even some belonging to people who are no longer running, were rushing to get in their campaign finance reports to the Federal Election Commission. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams joins me live here with some angles on the latest numbers. Kimberly, how are the remaining candidates doing if you look at the spreadsheets here?
Well, as expected, Hillary Clinton is ahead in fundraising and way ahead in spending. In June, her campaign spent more than $33 million. That's more than four times what the Trump campaign spent. Keep in mind, back in June, she was still technically in a race with Bernie Sanders. And moving forward, that juggernaut of the Clinton money machine is going to be all Trump all the time.
Now, beyond what the official campaigns are spending, there's super PACs, so-called dark money. But let's talk about the joint campaign committees. How are they playing into this money race?
Right. So as a reminder, these joint campaign committees are basically deals that allow a single person or group to bundle the legally allowed donations for candidates, national and state parties into one giant check. Clinton got a massive head start fundraising this way and now has close to $50 million in available cash at the end of June versus Trump, who had less than $30 million. And this is another reason why the convention in Cleveland is really important to Trump. It gives him an opportunity to meet with donors and state parties to try and catch up in that way.
The now official Republican nominee made much during the primary of self-financing his own campaign. He's not doing that for the general, but what happened to all that money he loaned to his campaign?
Well, it looks like he did what many presidential candidates do, which is to forgive that debt of about $45 million. He's loaned his campaign a total of about $50 million so far. Now he's really ramping up his appeals to individual donors as well as corporations to try and push him through the general election.
All right. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is down 0.3%. Dow and S&P futures are down 0.1% each, 20 points on the Dow future. The 10-year Treasury yield is up a bit, just under 1.59%. Market participants, like just about everyone else, are focused on the missing Ted Cruz endorsement of Donald Trump and the long chorus of boos that erupted in Cleveland. There's also interest in the corporate earnings reports that have been coming out pell-mell. The European Central Bank is meeting on interest rates and stimulus right now. For the U.S., a key meeting on interest rates does not happen until next week, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee. From the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Paul Ashworth at Capital Economics says for timing the next rate hike by the Fed,
I think we can rule out July.
Ashworth says aside from Brexit having been a bit of a bust, economic tumult-wise, recent U.S. data on job growth and consumer spending have been strong. Oil prices are up, good for domestic drillers and rig workers. The dollar has stopped rising, good for U.S. exporters.
The economy appears to be doing pretty well, not fantastic, and any concerns about recession appear to be unfounded.
Investment strategist Anthony Valeri at LPL Financial predicts if growth continues, the Fed will hike rates. But when? At the September meeting, right before Americans vote in November?
You know, there is a sort of a myth about the Fed in the election.
A myth the Fed won't mess with interest rates in an election year. But Valeri says it actually has.
Every election year back to 1968.
Still, he thinks the Fed will wait till December just to play it safe. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
It's been 1 month since the British went to the polls and ultimately decided to leave the EU. In the last day, the British Central Bank said there is no clear evidence that the decision has hurt the UK economy yet. Those last three letters, yet, are important to that sentence. A year ago this week, Grexit had reached a fever pitch, a vote in the possibility that Greece would crash out of the eurozone. This week, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has been reporting from Athens, revisiting some of his sources a year later. Yesterday, women on opposite sides of the vote last year. Today, the businessmen.
When I came here to the Dioptra publishing house in Athens a year ago, the country seemed on the brink of economic collapse. Businesses were grinding to a halt. A deathly hush had descended on this office.
A little bit noisier than last year, but still pretty quiet.
Well, last year was the morale was a bit low, but this year we're a bit better, yeah.
A bit better, but not much better, says Dioptra's boss, Costas Papadopoulos.
We still don't know what we're doing or where we're going. What we're saying between us here in Greece is it's a crime to be a businessman.
Greece's left-wing government, he says, is making businesses bear the brunt of deficit reduction through higher taxes. He now pays 58% on his profits, and more tax hikes are coming down the pike.
The cash that you need to pay every year is amazing, and you cannot survive. Things are going to be extremely difficult in a year's time from now.
He says hundreds of Greek businesses have shifted their headquarters to Bulgaria or Romania to escape Greece's soaring taxes. This local company, an online travel firm called Tripster, already has an office in Bucharest, Romania. The owner, Philip Brinkman, says he has no plans to pull out of Athens, but he's wary about creating any more jobs here.
You ask yourself, okay, does it make sense to open this position, for example, in Athens, or is it better to open a new position in Bucharest, in our other office, where taxation is more beneficial, let's say, for companies?
It's much lower.
Yes, of course.
Very bad news in a country with an unemployment rate of 25%. Brinkman says the government should not be trying to cut its deficit mainly by pushing up taxes.
What should have been done is to reduce actually costs in the government, make the public sector more efficient, more productive, have less people there.
But the government has many supporters working in the public sector. Making business do the heavy lifting is, politically, an easier option. In Athens, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Thank you, Stephen. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.